Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion and our debrief for this morning. We'll do these occasionally where we have experts in to talk about issues of the day. And of course, the issue of the day is New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver vacating his post by next week. Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli serving as interim speaker until an election for the post will be held on February 10th. And we welcome Legislative Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG, Blair Horner, to be with us this morning.
Who is actually slumming Joe because he's constantly noted in the New York Times on this issue. So and
slumming? And, this is slumming? This is great. Well, this is a step up. You don't know what my life is like, Alan.
No, we love having you here, really.
Yeah, it's great. Although Alan makes a wonderful point because, yeah, I've been reading your name. Your name is almost in the paper as much as Silver's name is.
Well,
but for better reasons.
Yes, friend Jerry Benjamin.
Yes,
the upstate quotes.
So for the listeners, this is the grumpy old men section segment of the piece this morning. We have Alan and Blair.
We call them the upstate quotes.
So let us begin with a baseline commentary from you, Blair, as to what you make of what has happened over the past 4 days.
Wow. Under the theory that you're presumed innocent, right? I think the initial reaction of the Assembly Democrats was to circle the wagons around their colleague and longtime speaker, Sheldon Silver. But I think as everyone read the complaint, which is that he illegally or legally, depending on how this plays out, was using his public office for private gain. Meanwhile, the members are back in the districts getting pounded by their constituents and newspapers. I think they just decided it just wasn't worth the grief. And so you end up now with, you know, how do you stitch together a incredibly diverse, disparate collection of Assembly Democrats? There's 106 of them. They're diverse as you can be in terms of race, ethnicity, gender, geography. Who can stitch all that together on a moment's notice? Turns out the answer is no one. So they punted, basically, by going with the number two guy, making him number one, which what the rules call for, by the way. If the speaker, for whatever reason, cannot be speaker, the majority leader assumes that authority. Essentially, that's what's happening. They're going to kick the can till right before the president's week break, which would also give them two more weeks to try to get their act together if someone can't stitch together the coalition. Morelli, who's a contender, gets a running head start, though.
He's the Rochester guy.
That's right. Yeah. He's from Rochester. He's been in the Assembly since 1990, former Assembly Insurance Committee chair, widely viewed as more pro-business, the more pro-business wing of the Assembly Democratic majority. My guess is he's going to try to keep everything together, get things from, you know, nowhere to somewhere in terms of the budget process, and then we'll see in a couple weeks.
I think there's another question I'd like to add on to all of this, and that is the lurking presence of the governor. Because clearly the governor will have favorites. If the governor can, for example, do something like get the Manhattan Democratic chair, Keith Wright, in there, then the governor basically becomes the speaker also.
Well, of the three people you hear the most about, Carl Hastie from the Bronx.
Hastie.
Isn't that what I said?
No, yes, he did. Yes, I just wanted to add a little pudding. I had to add pudding.
All right. See, this is I warned everyone it was grumpy old men time, and this is what we're getting here. So it's Hastie from the Bronx, Wright from Manhattan, Morelli from Rochester.
Right.
Of those three, two are viewed as allied with the governor. Right. Keith Wright from Manhattan, who's the former state Democratic chair, and Joe Morelli from Rochester. So certainly the governor has an interest in an assembly majority that is more or less compliant to what it is that he wants to do. One could look at this and say that Wright is a way to bleed votes away from Hastie so he can't sew up the Democrats in New York City and thus allow Morelli to become the speaker. But I think it's more confusing than that. And the fact that people get tagged as being pro-governor hurts in the conference because the conference, I think there's a large number of them that want to be viewed as independent of the governor. And be for whatever, lots of different reasons, ideological, constituent-based, whatever it is. And so it really is going to be a master quilt effort to stitch together the votes necessary.
And when you think about it, Blair, there are massive interest groups that are out there with a great deal to win or lose from all of this. For example, the teachers are at war with the governor.
Yeah, war is a nice way to put it.
Yeah. So if the governor if the governor is able to working the phones all night long, which we hear he does, is able to get a speaker of his choosing who is obligated to him, that is a strike against the teachers, obviously, and in terms of his reform program. And you better believe that they're out there flexing their muscles too.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what makes this that's what makes this so complicated. You have lots of interest groups that view the assembly as their champions, just like there are lots of groups that view the Senate Republicans as their champions.
Right.
And their strategies until the U.S. Attorney's Office weighed in, their strategies were based on an assembly Democratic majority headed by longtime Speaker Sheldon Silver. That's thrown into chaos. Their agendas and strategies are thrown into some chaos. And they want to make sure that whoever takes over is looking out for their interests. But it's really hard to figure all these votes out. The New York City Democrats are not a monolith. And despite the fact that they have the most Democrats from New York City, they're all different kinds of Democrats in the city. The Upper West Side representatives are not necessarily the same as the Bronx representatives. The Queens delegation is not the same as the Staten Island delegation. So stitching this all together is going to be really interesting.
But don't we have to?
But the governor does have the muscle to help make a lot of that happen.
Yeah,
He's got a lot of goodies that he can shower.
But under watching over him is Preet Bharara.
Right.
So Preet Bharara says, in a speech, very unusual speech, and said, by the way, I'm not the U.S. attorney. I'm giving this. I'm a private individual.
That's why they all came, too, right? They showed up because he's not the U.S. attorney.
Three men in a room is bad, he says. Yeah. That's what leads to the culture of corruption. Immediately, out comes the governor and says, because of the way that this thing is, I can't deal with a committee. I have to. I'm sorry to put it this way, but he spit in Bharara's face.
Well, I mean, the whole thing where the U.S. attorney does this news conference unveiling the complaint against the speaker and ends with "Stay tuned."
Yeah.
That I'm sure sent a collective shiver up the spines of Albany's political elite.
Which leads to the question, Blair Horner. What about the vetting process? To me, I take a look at the list of the possibilities. You didn't name Kathy Nolan of Queens.
Joe Lentil. There are others in the mix.
Well, yes. But saying we need something right now that will clean this up. I remember a column I wrote a couple of years ago, in which I said, I'm going to look for that column. If Shelley Silver wanted to go down as the greatest speaker in history, he would come up with a reform package that would open things up, and they would build a TR-type statue to him outside of the legislature and say, this is the man who made the difference. Maybe he should have listened to what I told him.
I think many people think that, Alan, about everything that you write. There are other contenders, and there might be some that are not. We're not even hearing about it. At a certain level, it may make sense to be sort of below radar right now in terms of sewing up the votes.
That's how TR got to be president.
Well, that's right. And history tells us that the process is always going to be has been different when these kind of things happen. When the last time there was a fight for not the last time, the first time in modern times there was a fight for speakers when Stanley Fink chose to resign. There was a 6-month fight for speaker between Alan Hevesy, Jerry Kremer, and then the winner, Mel Miller. But it played out post-session, pre-election. There was time for the members to sort of get to know the candidates. After that, Mel Miller gets convicted. He goes down. The next in command is Saul Weprin. Everyone coalesces behind Weprin relatively quickly. The next time is Weprin gets sick. Silver had been set up as the interim speaker, and then he sort of takes over. This time, at a bolt out of the blue, seemingly, and there is no heir apparent. The closest thing you have is Morelli.
Which is very smart on Shelley Silver's right. place because he wanted to make sure there was nobody ready to step in. His number two, real number two, was Denny Farrell, Herman Farrell, who was 80 in his 80s, a wonderful guy, but in his 80s.
That's right. And so that's what makes this uncharted waters in terms of how this is going to play out.
So in a world, according to Blair...
Joe Donahue would be speaker.
How should the process work?
Well... I mean, so, as I mentioned, the members, 40% of whom haven't been here for very long, they don't even know what's going on. I mean, we've proposed with our colleagues at other reform organizations
right.
that there be some sort of open hearing process where the candidates advance themselves and they answer questions from a bipartisan panel. And this sort of idea came from when Alan Hevesy resigned. The legislature appointed a special commission to hear the candidates who wanted to be comptroller because in the state constitution, the legislature approves the new comptroller. Now, the speaker is not the same thing. It's not a statewide elected official, but he is, in this case, in line if there's a vacancy for governor. He does have authority in lots of areas of the state law. So, for example, the Public Authorities Control Board, which approves lending projects for the 11 biggest public authorities, the speaker has a vote on that. So there's a very immense power vested in the speaker. We think there should be an open process.
So I saw your release. So who would run it? Like, who would operate it to make sure that it's fair?
Well, yeah, it would have to be bipartisan. That's the only way we could do that. And that would be the Assembly Republicans then, the fact that they would agree to such a process would act as a check on the Assembly Democrats. The fact that the public would be paying attention, I think, would ensure the best of behavior from the legislature that would be on it. We didn't get into the weeds on who should be on the panel. We just said it should be bipartisan and that it be a public process.
But it won't happen.
Well, I mean, you know, hope springs eternal, right? The fact that they kicked the can for 2 weeks means they have time for a process. We know there are members, I know this from talking to them, that liked our idea because they don't know who these people are. Some of them just got elected. They literally wouldn't be able to spot some of them in a lineup. And so what do you do about that? How do you have a process with 106 members can at least give thoughtful consideration to the next speaker unless you have some sort of formal process to happen? If you're going to do that, let's make it in the open so it's not totally wheeling and dealing in terms of stitching up the votes.
Now, maybe you just spend a couple of seconds, because this is a horse I've been riding for a while about in the open. The whole process of the legislature, we have an iron law of oligarchy. We have somebody sitting at the top of it who really becomes a sort of semi-dictator, no two ways about it, at least in his own party. All the discussion is going on in a closed conference or closed caucus. Nothing happens, as we've often said, you and I, on the floor of the legislature. It always happens in the secret conference. It seems to me that the secrecy is a big part of this.
Yeah, And while I wouldn't be so naive as to say that the public process would be the determining factor in who the next speaker is, if a candidate can't articulate what they're trying to do as speaker, that would hurt them within the conference. Mm. It's not just wheeling and dealing. So it would have an effect. It would have an effect on being able to, someone would have to come up and be able to articulate why they should be the speaker and what they want to do. That being said, New York State has a very powerful executive branch. It vests tremendous powers in its governor. The legislature is always going to want to have a strong leader so that they don't get played by the governor. That isn't necessarily the issue at hand. What we need, though, is a real process by which there's a public vetting, to some extent, of who these candidates are. They have too much power to be completely done, chosen in secret.
But look who goes to the head of the line. The Manhattan Democratic chairman, the Bronx Democratic chairman. This is asking for the same kind of trouble that they had with Sheldon Silver.
Well, again, Silver's definitely a different kind of animal in terms of the candidates we're hearing. I mean, in some ways, more like Morelli. I mean, he's a wheeler-dealer from Manhattan, but everyone thinks that he's very, very steeped in policy. He reads the bills. He's involved directly in the legislation. He's probably one of the state's experts on insurance law. I mean, he knows a lot. And so there's a lot of intellectual and policy firepower in the current and soon outgoing speaker. And that's not what's being debated right now. What's being debated, who stitches the votes together. And I think the public deserves to have someone who leads the assembly who can actually handle the substance as well as the politics.
So let's talk about, because we touched on this at the beginning, and I guess as we wrap up, but the head start, how important is that for Morelli? I mean, will it really make a difference?
Well, I mean, you know, who knows, right? Time will tell. But some extent, for the New York City Democrats to view someone as speaker that's not from New York City, in a sense, this is an audition for him to show how responsive he can be to the needs of the New York City Democrats in a way that makes them comfortable with someone outside of one of their boroughs being the leader. And, you know, so he gets a head start to strut his stuff. Whether or not that's enough, you know, of course, only time will tell. Race, ethnicity, gender, geography, those are all very powerful variables in this. But he gets a chance to sort of stitch it together and to deliver the favors for some of the members who may need it.
Let's all remember that the majority leader, which he is, Morelli, is always a sop to the upstate people. There's always a number two.
That's right.
Who is always from, you know, upstate. But in order to understand this full well, you have to understand the immense control that city people have on this. And that's why your chances of being chosen for an elective office as a Democrat from anywhere but New York City, one of the five boroughs, is not all that good.
Well, that's true. But do the boroughs all five of them stick together in terms of this speaker's vote? I think that's not clear.
As Woodrow Wilson once said, we're about to see a lot of, you know, secret negotiations secretly arrived at.
Blair Horner is legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. Blair, always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you very, very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We will welcome your comments. We do welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Don't forget about that lockbox, WAMC.org.
Oh, boy.
WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.